Live from Petonia, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Yeah, g'day, this is the Cinematica Podcast coming to you from Petonia in New Zealand. This is a 45 to an hour 45, depending on how much material we've got. We're going to try and keep it tight, though, because there's a lot to talk about in today's show. This is a local roundup of reviews, news and opinion, all about the world of cinema. We love going to the movies here, and we try and encourage as many people as possible to come in out of the sunshine. And sit in rows in the dark, staring at glowing rectangles. My name is Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio is
Simon Weary
and Kaylee Carruthers.
G'day, Simon. How was Australia?
It was lovely, jubbly. It was very warm. I had a great time. Family had a blast. Yeah, it was great.
And you managed to get away from the beach long enough to go and see any movies?
I went and saw Puss in Boots. And I went and saw a lovely little Adam Sandler film called Jack and Jill, which the kids really adored.
I am excited to hear about your reviews for that today, Simon.
We can't talk about Jack and Jill yet because it doesn't come out here in New Zealand.
Hopefully ever.
Maybe. It's at least February, isn't it? It's at least February.
Yeah, at least
before,
February, yeah.
Which I think this is a bit of a hobby horse of yours, Simon, about how far behind we all of us innocent New Zealanders are. And it's not fair, is it?
Well, it was an interesting... When I was over there, I just checked out a few of the film schedules and what was in the papers and so on. And yeah, there were a couple of films that I thought was interesting that they were sort of playing there and had been playing there for about 3 or 4 weeks.
And we don't get them till
February, March. Yeah.
It's a long time to wait, isn't it? And then we get the distributors complaining about people sort of going behind their backs and finding alternative... I mean, you flew all the way to Australia.
Oh, I did. That's the level of my passion and commitment. Plus, I had to take the kids on holiday. But yeah, no, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, I think there are probably very valid reasons as to why they do have those release patterns, but it is just, the worry is often you get a congestion of products and therefore, they don't get their fair shake.
Yep. Well, and maybe in the new year we'll hopefully get some of the distributors on the show we can grill them what the philosophy is behind release patterns in New Zealand, because there is. I know we had the Rugby World Cup here earlier on, which sort of made life really difficult for distributors and exhibitors all alike. Mm. But there are patterns, and wonder whether those patterns still hold true, in terms of people making as much money out of the pictures as they possibly can.
Yeah, and in a digital age too, with more conversions to digital, you suspect that release windows should be a bit shorter.
All right, we've already been distracted. Mm. We're already off topic. Anyway, every week we're here to review all the latest releases. We're going to talk to interesting people about what they've been watching. And we keep a close weather eye on what's happening around the world, all the films and stories that we're looking forward to. And in today's program, Kaylee has already given up on Christmas and has moved on to New Year's Eve. Simon, you're going back to school with the first grader, and I take a look at two quite different cinematical presentations of evangelical Christianity, Kevin Smith's Red State and Alex Kendrick's faith-based Courageous. We also have a special guest on the show, a preview of a very sweet little film from Italy called The Salt of Life. And last week I spoke to the writer and director of that film, Gianni Di Gregorio, so we'll be playing that interview later on in the show. So all of that and more in this week's edition of the Cinematica Podcast. But first, do we have some feedback and follow-up from previous shows? Have we had any? Is there anything in the mailbag, Kaylee?
No, actually, it's a fairly quiet week on Facebook and Twitter. So
everybody's Christmas shopping, or they're all actually at the movies. Maybe
yes,
that's it. And
maybe.
And of course, you can't tweet us or Facebook us. I can hear those birds, by the way.
That's lovely, isn't it?
we opened the window because it's actually such a warm Petone evening, and now we've got nature.
I almost want to whistle back at them. Can I? I can't do that. No.
Can you do it? It was saying we don't have John Lee, because John Lee, one of our previous special guests, does a fantastic Tui impersonation. So we could have had that maybe later on. So, of course, it's impossible for people to tweet on Facebook during while they're watching movies. It's not on, as we discussed last week. So maybe that's why we haven't had as much feedback as we have. Oh, no, we've had some suggestions. It's not true. Not true. Adsville.
I'm glad you can pronounce it, because we got called out for that.
Yes, I know. And no doubt we will again for mispronouncing various Twitter handles. But anyway, we did get some suggestions, and that is that, firstly, we should... this was a suggestion of yours, I think, which is that we should actually tweet that we're going to a particular screening at a particular cinema and what time we'll be there, so that we could perhaps be mobbed by adoring fans.
That'd be nice.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay. So that's something we'll definitely be thinking about doing in the days and weeks to come. And also, there was a suggestion from Adsville that we tweet our two-word reviews after the show.
Three-word reviews.
Maybe even three-word reviews. I think we should certainly consider three-word reviews, because I'm finding two words really hard. Personally, I know it was my idea, but I think it's something we should consider.
I don't know. It's like Poland. It could be turning into a short sentence. I'm worried.
Kaylee, what's been happening at the New Zealand box office?
Well, it has been an exciting week at the New Zealand box office as usual. So coming in at number 5, we have Immortals, which is still hanging on after 3 weeks in release. Number 4, Arthur Christmas, after 3 weeks in release as well.
And I think its position in the top 5 is almost entirely down to the enthusiasm of Cinematica. .co.nz. I think we can take lots of credit, because nobody really knew about it before we started talking about it.
No.
And it's an absolutely superb film. Now, watch it on the weekend. It's brilliant.
Yep.
I cried.
And did you cheer as well?
I did. I loved it. Yeah. Loved it.
I know. It's going to become, I think I said this the other day, I think it's going to become a bit of a Christmas ritual at my house.
Yes, and down from number 1 last week, in number 3 spot is Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn.
Finally, we've managed to get it off that number 1 spot.
Yes. So at number 2 is New Year's Eve.
Wow.
And which I guess everyone went to because they were curious.
Yeah. Well, they'd have to be curious. And hopefully, if anybody's sitting on the fence regarding New Year's Eve this weekend, we will put you straight.
Yes. And at number 1 is Puss in Boots.
Awesome.
Yes. Yeah.
That's good.
Which I know you reviewed, but I saw it in the last few days as well, and it's good, but it's no Arthur Christmas.
No. And you saw it in Australia. Do they have different voices for Australia? Do they all have different accents when you watch them over there?
Mate. No, there was nothing like that. It was all Mr. Banderas and co.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
But in some good news as well, When a City Falls, of course, New Zealand documentary, is still in the top 10. It's sitting at number 8, which is up from last week's 9. So it's slowly climbing.
It has built.
Thanks to Cinematica.
And that is built every week. Its box office has gotten bigger every week.
So the word of mouth is really strong on it. Yes. I know that lots of people who have seen it feel that very passionate about getting the word out. Careful
there's
there.
A gong.
Your time's up.
All right. Yes. No. That's obviously the signal for me to shut up.
No, that's a get the word out gong.
That's putting your drink down clumsily.
Yes. Shh. I was playing it along. No, but there was a bit of a complaint on Twitter that it is difficult because. When a City Falls is not playing at many cinemas, but it is worth the trip. Get yourself on a bus.
Yeah, and it did open more widely, and I think a lot of cinemas that perhaps didn't do all that well with it the first week have let it go, which means that it is harder to find than it was when we were talking about it 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think you mentioned 50 locations.
Yeah,
it's quite a lot.
All right, time to get into our first review of the show.
Some people swear there's no beauty left in the world. No magic.
Oh, come on. We've got to do something to get you out of your New Year's Eve funk.
Then how do you explain the entire world coming together on one night?
It's New Year's Eve, bro. We're doing something.
To celebrate the hope of a new year.
My New Year's resolutions. If you can make these come true by midnight, you get these.
4 tickets to that party? You called the right guy.
Is that your New Year's dress? It's just something I'm working on for a rainy day.
You should wear it tonight.
Kaylee, you saw New Year's Eve. What did you think? That good, eh?
It was great.
Did you stay awake through the whole thing?
I did.
Oh, well, that's something?
Because the people sitting beside me were talking through the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Well, you should thank them at the end.
Yes. So, New Year's Eve, if you didn't know what it's about, it's about the lives of several couples and singles in New York, and their stories intertwine over the course of course, New Year's Eve. And what it is Valentine's Day, but on a real holiday. So if you've seen the film Valentine's Day, you're just going to be watching the same thing, but it takes place on New Year's
Eve.
Is
Valentine's Day not a real holiday? It's just as fake as New Year's Eve, isn't it? I mean, it's just as sponsored as New Year's Eve. Did you see all of the logos that were the product placement throughout New Year's Eve?
I think Sherlock Holmes is opening.
Maybe? Do you think that it's maybe...
I hadn't heard of it until I saw New Year's Eve. I was really unsure.
Do you think maybe it's distributed by the same company that made New Year's Eve, and that's why there was a massive close-up of the poster at the very end of the film? I think that... Really? I don't want to sound cynical.
There's more than one. There's like three. You could turn that into a drinking game. Let's not lie. It was boring. There was no emotional involvement in any of the stories or any of the characters. It's number one in America this week, so everybody went, and everyone wanted to watch it.
I'm deeply depressed at that fact, I have to say.
Doesn't that have an older love, a few older love stories crossing through it as well? Like some older actors?
John Bon Jovi's kind of old.
No, well, he is looking a bit rough now.
Yeah, he is definitely a little bit Botoxed, actually, I think. I have a massive problem with Katherine Heigl. And, you know, she's in it. That's a problem for me. There is a bit of a sort of May to December, probably May, September romance, Michelle Pfeiffer and Zac Efron, which is kind of creepy, wasn't it, at the end there,
I have to say. Yeah, when she's dressed up like a 20-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was some very odd choices in the casting. I think one of my favourite pieces of completely bizarre casting was Ludacris, the rapper, as the chief of police. who never appears to leave the office where he's watching them set up Times Square for the New Year's Eve party. And did you notice how his uniform doesn't fit?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the whole thing just seems to be thrown together in a really random, shabby fashion. And this is a very, very sad observation to make, is that this is the first time that I've ever seen Robert De Niro on screen and not actually believe that he is who he says he is. You know, like even in his worst films, even in his most bizarre choices, I've always kind of gone, oh, well, you are who you say you are, but no. Just rubbish.
Bizarre. I mean, that's a strange choice, isn't it, for De Niro? Well, is it? I guess he does the fuckers and all that. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's a slightly strange choice. It is a little bit of a love affair to New York. There's lots of New York locations in it, and he is a big cheerleader for New York with the Tribeca Film Festival, and his company's based there. He still lives there. So I can sort of understand. He only worked for a day, I would imagine.
Yeah.
He certainly didn't put himself out from a performance point of view.
But it's funny, isn't it, how these actors do this type of thing? I mean, just going back to Jack and Jill, which, you know, I don't want to get too carried away on, but Pacino's in Jack and Jill.
Oh.
And Johnny Depp.
On that note, let's move on swiftly. Dan, what was your two-word review?
Oh, my two-word review of New Year's Eve. Now, this I'll just prep you for this. New Year's Eve is made by Gary Marshall, who is probably best known for making Pretty Woman back in the day. So my two-word review for New Year's Eve is pretty awful.
Well done. Not that there was anything that was picked up to start with, but my review dropped the ball.
Oh, nice work.
Mm,
yeah.
Punny.
Yeah, good. Punny. Like it. And Simon, you haven't seen it, so we'll just...
No.
Next we have... He said, hopefully... I know. Bear with me for just one second while... Yes. Carry on. No. I've got 3 seconds before this window clears and I'm allowed to push the button again. Sorry, so that's a slight technical problem.
We'll just cut that out.
I will. I'll edit that out later on. What I'll do is I'll cover it with that really loud belch that you did earlier on, Kenya. Yeah. That Coke belch. Yeah.
My people, the new government has announced free education for all.
You got to see this.
My name is Kimani Maruge.
This is a primary school.
I heard on the radio.
They meant children.
They said everybody.
Why does someone as old as you want to go to school?
I want to learn to read.
I'm making an executive decision. Let Maruge in.
Simon, you went back to school?
I did, and I really enjoyed it. I I guess I should give you a brief rundown. It's the true story of an 84-year-old Kenyan villager and ex-Mau Mau freedom fighter who fights for his right to go to school for the first time and to get an education he could never afford and was never offered. So, I mean, it's a very... I found it, you know, there's a political element that sort of weaves its way through it about the colonial conflict that took place in the past and how poorly people were treated by the British, and how this character had his options limited in terms of education and goes back to become a first grader, and I found it, you know, it's a little bit of a roller coaster. There's some places where it's a bit clunky, but overall, I thought it was a very good film.
It's darker than I was expecting.
Yeah,
I saw the trailer lots over the last sort of 6 months or so that it's been playing, and I must admit that I thought that it was going to be a more sort of gentle, feel-good movie than it actually was. Certainly, the political element and the historic. There's a lot of flashbacks, you know. So it goes backwards and forwards from the present day, where he's in the classroom and they're getting used to him, and he's getting used to them, and his memories of the 1950s, 40s and 50s, when he was a freedom fighter. And it turns out, well, I didn't know this. It turns out that the Brits behaved pretty shabbily.
Yeah, brutal. Oh, very brutal to the local population. Mm. And yeah, so and it does kind of cover that, and not in a gory way, but just I think it does it quite well in terms of how it covers that sort of dark past.
Mm.
And then also I guess the battle to actually have him allowed to have his education, and the tribal sort of conflicts that sort of
that was the other, that was the other thing I was going to mention. Yeah, that it tiptoes up to the topic of modern sort of the modern world and tribal scenarios without necessarily getting too deeply into it, but you certainly get a sense of the pressures that are on modern Kenyan life. Kaylee, did you see it?
I did see it. I saw it today. I was actually really surprised because I found that it hasn't been critically received very well. It's quite mixed reviews, saying that it isn't... I guess that it's too simple. The critics are finding it too simple. They're not finding it academic enough. Well, really, I think that's a bit of a bonus. You know, I found it a nice film to really get into. I wasn't confronted, and I didn't feel uncomfortable. Like, obviously, I felt uncomfortable watching some of the scenes, but it wasn't really, really in your face and really political. It was something that's a bit easier to digest. So I think it'll do really well with audiences.
Yeah, I think New Zealand audiences will respond really well to it if they get a chance to see it around this time when it's when it's so busy. Mm-hmm. I think that there is potential for it to get buried in the forthcoming avalanche. Kaylee, have you got your two words for the first grader?
Yes, and in response to, you know, where you're spending your money this holiday season, my two-word review is worthy contender for your holiday
nice.
Money.
Yep. Mine would be an educational inspiration.
Well, that's good. Educational inspiration is good. Mine is Tragic Twinkle.
Tragic
Twinkle. That's because he's such a twinkly character, isn't he, the Maruga? There's a sort of light in his eyes and a zest for life, but there's also all this tragedy. So
yeah, there is. But he went and spoke in front of the UN, you know, about sort of his...
Yeah, ultimately there was a redemption, a redemption story, and we all love those, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Time for some news.
Yes. Thank you very much. So, awards season is of course upon us. So let's open up our news day with some LA Critics Awards. So, just a smidgen of some of the awards that were presented this week by the LA Film Critics. For Best Picture, we had The Descendants with The Runner.
Which we haven't seen yet here in New Zealand.
No, it is opening soon.
Look at the wall.
January, end of January.
Look at the wall.
End of January for The Descendants. That's George Clooney, isn't it?
Yes, with The Runner.
19th of January, everyone. Just put that one in your diary.
Yep, and that's definitely a front runner for an Academy Award nomination, if not a Best Picture, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it is. It's getting a lot of buzz.
But it beat The Tree of Life. Tree of Life came second.
Tree of Life did come second.
Ooh. Big call.
Yeah.
Justice.
Best Animation was awarded to Rango, with the runner-up was The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn, which is going to be released Boxing Day, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Big, big one. Best Director went to Terrence Malick for The Tree of Life, and the runner-up was Martin Scorsese for Hugo.
Right, and Hugo we're not very far off Hugo here in New Zealand as well. That's mid-January, isn't it?
Yes.
Are we allowed to talk about Hugo?
No, I mean it's not Fight Club,
isn't it? First rule of Hugo:
don't talk about Hugo.
No, and actually, you know, we can chuckle, but actually, you know, the cinematic podcast team, we actually spent the afternoon at the movies at a film that we're not allowed to tell you about.
We had
because
to turn our phones off.
We had to turn our phones off, even though they were buried deep in our pockets and our handbags. We're not allowed to tell you whether we enjoyed it or whether there was any tattooing involved.
On the seats out of boredom.
That's a lovely tattoo you have, Dan.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. It's a dragon.
Oh, very nice. In fact,
anyway.
We could give some away. We should give... Ooh.
What? What? Have we got stuff to give away?
Yes, not this week. But when a certain film comes out that we're very excited about, there will be giveaways.
Fantastic. Okay. Sorry, right. I derailed you again.
Continuing, for Best Actor, the sexiest man in a turtleneck, Michael Fassbender for A Dangerous
Method.
Was
that an award? The sexiest man in a turtleneck.
Well, he got best
actor. I thought the LA film critics were getting a bit creative.
No, I was. So he got the best actor award for A Dangerous Method, Jane Eyre, Shame, and X-Men First Class.
Did he win for all of them?
I think so, which is a bit intense.
Well, that's Shame. Like, I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Well, you've seen Shame. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're still a little bit behind you on in that regard. I have to say, you know, when you as busy as that, he should probably have won Best Ensemble. Shouldn't he?
Really? Oh, and ensemble for outfit as well. The runner-up was Michael Shannon for Take Shelter.
And does anybody know whether Take Shelter is actually getting released here? Because it wasn't a big hit at the festival, but I know that everybody who saw it got a really big kick out of it. But I just don't know if it's actually got dates here in New Zealand. Mm. It may well be one of those ones that just drops off. That would be a real shame, actually. It'd be a very hard film to sell, but...
It's from what I can tell, it's not on the release schedule, so it's probably not...
Ah, well...
It might come out of the blue, though.
Okay, well, maybe we could start a little campaign. All right.
I'm almost to the bottom of my list. Best Actress goes to Yoon Jung-hee for Poetry, runner-up Kirsten Dunst for Melancholia, and Best Foreign Language Film went to City of Life and Death with the runner-up A Separation, which is a favourite of yours, Dan.
Separation was one of my favourite films at the festival, and that does have a New Zealand release date. I think we can expect to see that in the new year. So, what was the one before that? City of Life and Death. Haven't seen it on anybody's release list, but that's not to say that it won't show up at something like the World Cinema Showcase at Easter time. So there is potential to see some of these, maybe in very, very limited runs.
Right. Continuing on with our news, for some reason there is going to be a sequel to The Lincoln Lawyer, a film that was pulled from the New Zealand release about 2 weeks before it was due out. Matthew McConaughey's The Lincoln Lawyer is also getting a sequel in addition to the ABC drama series that spawned...
It's getting a television series.
A television
series. And it's getting a sequel, and it wasn't worth releasing in New Zealand. It's a bizarre situation. It was pulled so late here in New Zealand, there were bus ads running for it. There were posters up at all the picture theatres. It was a peculiar situation. The author of the book was on a tour to promote it. Any insider knowledge on why that might have been pulled? Because it couldn't have been for box office reasons overseas. Because
ours is not to reason why.
Well, yes, it is actually. That is why we're here.
Well,
we are here to reason why.
The decision was made, and it was an interesting decision to make.
Yes, and in more sequel news, in more exciting sequel news. One name is often left out of when you're talking about the film Drive, and that's James Salas, the man who actually wrote the novel which the script was based. And it turns out that this author has written a sequel to the original novel, and Driven, which is the title, will be published next year. So if you want to know what Driver is up to and where he's flaunting that silk jacket, hold on and keep an eye on your local bookstore.
Here's an idea too. Like, I got this cool link from somebody who's obviously down in the know about getting your own Drive jacket.
I think
with the scorpion on
we
the
can
back.
Put that on the
show notes.
Yeah, let's put that out
definitely.
There.
I can think of a few people who will be getting one of those for Christmas.
I wonder if we shouldn't grab one and put it out there for some sort of competition. We can look at that for next week.
Oh, that's just too exciting for words.
Well, I want one too.
So we're going to get a bulk discount.
And then when we go live, we'll all wear our silk jackets.
Yeah, I just
and the driving gloves.
Yes. In exciting trailer news, the trailer has finally landed for the long-anticipated Men in Black 3. It involves time travel. And the first trailer for The Hobbit premiered at the Alamo Drafthouse during the 13th edition of the Butnumathon. I think it was last week or this week. So we should be seeing that trailer soon in cinemas for The Hobbit.
And as soon as it is available for embedding on a web page, we will make sure that cinematica.co.nz has both of those. I saw a trailer on iTunes this week for a film called Mirror Mirror. Has anybody seen that? I'm not sure if it's on anybody's release list. But you know that there are two films coming out next year that are based on Snow White?
Yes.
Why? Why are there two films? There's Snow White and the Huntsman, which is a bit darker, I think. And then there's Mirror Mirror, which is certainly had Julia Roberts in it and looks like it's a lot funnier. Made by the guy who made Immortals, which is playing in cinemas at the moment. And it looked pretty funny, I have to say. Mirror Mirror. I haven't seen her on anybody's list, so it may not even be out in 2012. It might be a little bit later on than that, but who knows? It's funny, isn't it, how Hollywood gets these little bees in their bonnet and a whole lot of films about the same subject all arrive at the same time, and, you know, some succeed and some fail.
Yes. And as our last piece of news, we want to leave you with a nice quote from Ridley Scott, who recently did a push for why audiences should watch films in cinema and why it's important. So Ridley Scott said...
Is that a
seagull.
Oh.
You hear that? Be gone, flying rat.
I thought that sounded like a cat after your birds on your roof.
No, we didn't.
So
back to Ridley Scott.
Sorry if you're listening.
If you're still listening.
The seagull is.
In my view, the only way to see a film remains the way the filmmaker intended, inside a large movie theater with great sound and pristine picture. Music and dialogue that doesn't fully reproduce the soundtrack of the original loses an essential element for its appreciation. Simply put, the film loses its power. So there you go. Ridley Scott says...
The patron saint of Cinematica.
Go
to the movies.
Go to the movies.
What he misses out in that wonderful description, though, is the other reason for going and watching movies at a movie theater, and that is other people. Watching a film with other people is really cool because it's a communal experience.
The Jaffa droppers, all the loud breathers.
Okay, so not everybody. Most people.
You've got to have it as a shared experience. There's no other way to see a film.
Exactly. There's something about laughing at a great comedy with 200 other people that just is fantastic. And so something like Sione's Wedding 2 coming out next year.
Or Few Best Men. Both are going to be very, very funny.
Yeah, I'm not with you on A Few Best Men, I have to say.
Have you seen that?
I couldn't watch it to the end, actually. I got about 40 minutes of the way through it and thought that I really had pressing engagements somewhere else.
I think it comes back to that shared experience. If you're in a crowd of 200 people and you're watching a film like that,
I was,
and you're all hysterical. Were you? It wasn't just a media screening.
It was a weird little. It was a secret screening. It was a surprise film, and so a whole lot of people turned up not knowing what they were going to watch, and they all had different expectations. And I think that made a really big difference.
They wanted Tintin or something like that, didn't they?
They thought they were going to watch Tintin exactly. Yeah. And you know, the very first title that shows up. For A Few Best Men is the Film Australia logo, and you could have heard everybody groan.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. I mean, yeah, because I saw that with about 200 people, and my eyes were shut with laughing and tears. I just couldn't keep them open.
Well, maybe I'll give it another go.
What's her name? The old what was that? Xanadu lady. You know that classic film Xanadu? Mm-hmm. Olivia Newton-John. Yeah, mm-hmm. on roller skates back then.
But Xanadu lady.
Yeah. But watching her do,
lady.
But watching her do kind of lines of coke, was very. I mean, I found it funny at the time. You know, there's something. Okay. There's a dark side to her, and I was pleased to see it.
So, and do we have a date for A Few Best Men? Is it on your? Is it on your whiteboard?
It is the 2nd of February. There you go.
2nd of February. Be somewhere else is my recommendation. I'm sure there'll be others.
We've got to review that. Let's not.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's not. Okay. Now this weekend coming up around New Zealand at specially selected cinemas, there is a sneak preview weekend of a film called The Salt of Life, and this was a film that played at the festival. It's by a director called Gianni Di Gregorio, an Italian director. It's a follow-up to a film of his that was very, very successful called Mid-August Lunch, and he's found a particular niche for himself, writing these sort of whimsical comedies about a particular part of Rome. He plays himself, or he plays a character very similar to himself. himself in these films, and he seems to be the kind of guy who gets pushed around by life a little bit, and pushed around by the women in his life. And so the new film, The Salt of Life, is very similar to that. Thanks to Rialto, the distributors, I had a chance to talk with him in Rome. I didn't go to Rome, unfortunately, but I was on one end of a telephone line and he was on the other end of a telephone line.
But if anyone wants to sponsor us to go to Rome in future to do interviews, we're more than happy to do that.
Absolutely. Form an orderly queue.
Yeah.
What I should point out is that Gianni De Gregorio doesn't speak very much English, so the conversation was translated by his wonderful personal assistant, Ricardo. So I've edited out the long stretches where the translation happens between the two of them, because otherwise you'd be listening to Italian for a long period of time. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but we have spliced it down so that the voice you hear will actually be Ricardo repeating Gianni De Gregorio's words. So it was a very interesting conversation, and the two of them were delightful company on the phone.
Yeah. Okay. So my first question for Gianni is about his earliest cinema memories. In his biography, it says that sometimes he went to the movies three times a day, and I was wondering what were the films that he fell in love with when he was youngest.
The first thing that he wants to say is that during that time, there was a lot of genre, a lot of kind of different type of movie. So there was a huge choice of the type of movie. They were not all just drama or comedy. They were Western, fantasies. And together with that, it was very easy also in the whole of the cinemas to find very Hawthorne cinema, a very intellectual cinema like Kurosawa or Fellini. So there was a lot of variation and a lot of choice during that time. Yeah, and also since TV was not so important, cinema couldn't be much more, and you could have a very pure eyes on cinema.
It also in his biography, it mentions that he was very affected by Martin Scorsese's film Mean Streets. Mm-hmm. And also, more recently, he was one of the co-writers of the gangster movie Gomorrah. And I was wondering whether, you know, the movies that he's now making himself with his own name above the title, they're very different to those urban dramas, and I was wondering whether he still has that sort of gritty background to him.
So he says, yeah, absolutely. This specific kind of movie is still on me. I'm still very intoxicated by that. The only difference is that when I write with someone else, it's easier for me to talk about matters like the movie that you mentioned before. When I write by myself, the only problem is when I write alone or when I direct a movie, it changes completely, and I have this very detached vision, and comedy comes alone immediately, because it's a kind of, I defend myself from pain through comedy. So I think I would be not able to do that kind of drama just by myself. Okay.
Thank you. Okay. The just a follow-up question to that, he talks about comedy as being a way of insulating himself from pain and perhaps the realities of life. But I watched The Salt of Life again this evening, and I realized that the pain of life is not terribly far away from the main character. He it takes until the very end of the film before he is, I think, able to really connect with his own sort of freedom and his own choices. He's been living for other people for most of the film, and sort of being bossed around by the women in his life. And so I suspect that Mr. De Gregorio's comedies still have a core of a real feeling underneath.
It's true. It's completely true. I tried to keep it underneath as much as possible, but at the end, melancholy came out by itself. See, so it really came by itself, to alone, while I was working with the dog. You know, that moment of the movie, I understood that melancholy was getting out, but at the same time, I was aware that there was the power of the movie, and that the movie had to have these, and so I keep it in the movie, and I'm happy with it. No? Yeah.
And I loved the scene in the fountain with the Gianni playing in the fountain, and it reminded me of Fellini, as I'm sure any time that there's a fountain in Rome, people think of Fellini. Was that a conscious connection that Gianni made?
Certo. So while he says no, when I wrote scenes, when I was thinking about the scenes, there was no connection with La Dolce Vita, the movie of Fellini, at all. But it was very fun, because when I was shooting the scene, everybody from the crew was calling me Anita, Anita, Anitona. So everybody was making a joke out of these. So while I was shooting the scenes, I thought about the Dolce Vita, because everybody was calling me Anita. But otherwise, it was something that it was not related at all.
The film is made in the same neighborhood that Gianni grew up in and lives in now. Can you tell me a little bit about that neighborhood and what kind of character that part of Rome has?
I think it's a very particular and special neighbor in Rome that had always been a place historically full of people and full of passaging of people. And even now that it's so full of tourists and has become so much a neighborhood that attract tourists, that immediately felt good, immediately feel good in the neighborhood. So it's very special, because it's always been a place surrounded by people that makes people feel good. And it's true that it's a little village inside Rome.
Yeah.
So it feels like you live in a village if you live in Trastevere. Trastevere is the name of the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, if a foreigner comes to Trastevere and stops there for 2 or 3 days, immediately everybody after 2 days starts to say hi to him and to greet him, and the people from the bars learns the name of the person and always says hi to him. So it's a place where you feel good, and it has a lot of warm in itself, and it is a character in the movie, because it's a character in the life. It's very warm and very welcoming.
Yeah, I want to ask about the characters in the movie, because I know that Gianni is... likes to write characters that are very similar in character to the people who will portray them, and they have the same first names. And I was wondering if he could tell me a little bit about why he chooses to work that way.
Okay, so wrote a character, and then I look for an actor or a non-actor, because I work with the both of it. I work either with actors, then non-actors. And then I'm looking for an actor who has a strong personality, a personality that is as much as possible similar to that character. And then, during the shoot of the movie, I use that personality as much as possible to get me and the movie influenced by that personality of the actor or the non-actor. And also, I make them, in the same way, they improvise a lot during the movie. There is a lot of improvisation. Mm-hmm. So their personality affect the movie very much and affect their character very much. And I see if I leave them free during the scene to improvise, I see that sometimes they say things that are even smarter or more beautiful than I wrote. So I leave them freedoms because they contribute so much to the movie. Yeah. So much.
I want to ask about improvising now, because mm-hmm. there are many people in the movie business who are not very confident with improvising, mm-hmm. either directors working with actors who improvise or actors yeah. improvising. I was going to ask about Gianni's I'm sorry, this is a big lead up. You can ignore most of the lead up to this question, but I was going to ask about his theatre background and whether training in the theatre has given him that confidence about working with improvisation.
Yeah, one sec. A very beautiful question.
Oh, thank you.
Theater has been extremely important for me because I my background is with this very important teacher. His name was Alessandro Feresen.
Mm-hmm.
And he in his work he starts from a method that it's a method very related to the Stanislavski method.
Uh-huh.
But he used to work incredibly with improvisation. So he used to work a lot with the... he improvised a lot. It was a technique that he used a lot. So, and there was also always this exercise of trying to get in the middle of the freedom, so the improvisation as a freedom, but mm-hmm. at the same time, the ability of controlling himself, so the technique. So the work that we were doing, it was the balance between these two opposites, the freedom and the control.
Mm.
So in a movie, when I make a movie, I think it's very important and very good to improvise. But to do that, you have to have a very solid and very strong screenplay behind you that allows you, that protects you and allows you to improvise. But you need to have that as a floor to put your feet on.
Mm. Now, I've got a question for about Gianni's character, his real-life character and the character in the film. In the film, the character he plays is retired, with plenty of time on his hands to run errands and to walk dogs and to sort of get up to mischief as well. And yet Gianni seems to be busier than he's ever been. I was wondering if that life of leisure appeals to him now.
Di questo concetto, se sei la vita da pensato un po' ti affascina, beh, so he would say that before he started making this movie as a director, he was very worried to become one of that guy who always sits in front of the bar in the movie, you know?
Oh, yes, yes.
One of that old guys that was always in the bar. Now that he's making all this movie, he wished to become one of them.
Yes, I wonder whether that's going to be possible. The more successful his films are, the more in demand he's going to be. I have one more question for you. Thank you very much for your time up to now.
No problem.
One of my questions is that one of the themes of The Salt of Life is Italian men keeping the flame of passion alive and their love for women, and possibly the most famous Italian with this character was Prime Minister Berlusconi, who was famous for maintaining that Italian reputation and keeping that alive. But he's gone now, and I was wondering whether Gianni feels that Italy is losing or gaining in terms of their sort of masculinity, I guess.
He says that this is something that will always be in Italian people, because they have the passion inside and they'll be always about them and can't take it away from them. But now with Berlusconi gone, he hopes that the way of Berlusconi shows that passion, which was a very very exaggerated way and not beautiful way, will go away, and the only thing that will stay will be the true, natural, and positive and healthy way of Italian to love women.
Gianni and Riccardo, thank you very much for your time.
I'm sure,
Riccardo, you made my questions much more exciting than they really were.
No, not at all. Dice che io, secondo lui, sto traducendo le domande sono ancora più belle di quello che. Thank you so much for your time, you, and we're very happy that we did this interview. And
excellent.
Very happy.
Thank you, and good luck for your film in New Zealand.
Thank you so much.
Gianni De Gregorio and his personal assistant, Riccardo. And Gianni is the writer and co-writer and director of The Salt of Life, which has some sneak preview screenings this weekend around New Zealand and then opens nationwide on Boxing Day. But it's going to have a hard road, Simon? There's so much happening on Boxing Day. We talked about this before, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the art house department, I guess you've got Iron Lady, which is a bit crossover. Then you've got Salt of Life, Albert Nobbs, and even Melancholia is going to get released. So it's pretty tough.
It is going to be tough. But I thought the film was delightful, and certainly talking to both of those guys across the world was a lot of fun last Monday night. So thanks very much to Rialto for setting that up. We're going to get back down to earth, or actually maybe the opposite, pointing in the direction of heaven for the next couple of films.
Welcome, family.
Good evening.
Good evening, Grandpa.
I hate the wickedness of America. Rampant fornication, adultery, abortion, flagrant sexuality, everywhere. And it's up to the righteous to curb the spread of its disease. You might have children out now. Gonna get grown up in here.
Yes. Red State is interesting for a couple of reasons. One, it's that it's a film by Kevin Smith, who's had a lot of failures recently. He's probably best known for films like Clerks and what else is Kevin Smith famous for?
Clerks 2, Zach and Mary Make a Porno,
Zach and Mary. That's right. And but he's had a few clunkers recently, and this is a film that he funded independently and was distributing independently around the world. And I kind of thought I had the impression that it would probably go straight to video here, but it has got a theatrical release, and it's playing at select cinemas around New Zealand. And it is about a rogue church in a red state of America, one of those Bible bashing states. And this church is so rogue that they are in fact picking off various people in their community whose lifestyles they disapprove of, and torturing them in much the same way that happens in films like Saw, torturing them and then offing them. And unfortunately, they come across a righteous alcohol, tobacco and firearms agent played by John Goodman, who so there's a bit of that whole Waco, Texas standoff thing going on as well. And I must admit that it's certainly a competent piece of filmmaking from Kevin Smith, and there's quite a lot of his, I think he still makes a really good living script doctoring for other films and sort of punching up scripts with adding jokes, because it certainly seems that somebody's done a good job of, there's some quite good lines in Red State, and you know, he's it's obviously dear to his heart, that whole idea of intolerance and intolerance and lack of forgiveness in the very place where you're supposed to find the most tolerance and the most forgiveness. And so he's very, very obviously worked up about the hypocrisy of churches in America. Kaylee, you've seen it too, haven't you?
Yes, I did. It was, I enjoyed it. I was, you know, against my better nature. I'm not a huge fan of Kevin Smith and his usual stylings. I don't understand why people like.
I thought
Clerks,
he turned into a very lazy filmmaker, I think. And
but the funny thing is, if you've ever read his book or hear him speak, he knows he's not a good director. He doesn't take himself seriously, which I think is a bonus. Like he's just out there doing his thing. He's having fun, and if people watch his movies, then like sweet, he makes some money. But if you are a Kevin Smith film fan and you're looking for Jay and Silent Bob and the usual gags and the usual cast members, this is not the right place for you. It isn't. There's no Jay and Silent Bob. There, no. It isn't your usual, but it is enjoyable.
It is awfully sweary.
It is.
I should just warn you. I mean, apart from the violence, and there's quite a lot of violence in it as well. But the YouTube trailer. Just if anybody's thinking about going onto YouTube and going, oh, I wonder a little bit more about Red State. The YouTube trailer is full of foul language. It took me quite a long time to edit that little piece of audio together to try and get rid of it all. It is definitely a film for grown-ups, and I think that it gets a sort of tentative thumbs up from me. Have we got two words for Red State?
I have more words though.
More? Oh, you've got more words.
Yes, I do. I thought this was a good film this week out of the ones we did watch because I really would like to mention for Red State that there were some great cast members in it. I mean, you mentioned John Goodman, Melissa Leo's in there, mm-hmm. Playing the crazy pastor Michael Parks, and of course,
what
you know,
have I seen him in before?
Grindhouse, he's in the Kill Bill series.
Okay.
Tarantino, yep. If you go to Michael Parks' IMDb page, there's a quote that Tarantino says that he's like the best living actor in Hollywood.
He's heck of a good.
He's
to be said.
Great. Hmm. He's great. And he does so well as this crazy pastor.
Kevin Pollak's in it as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So there are quite a few. He's called in a few favors, hasn't he, Kevin Smith, in terms of getting people along to sort of. There are a lot of sort of familiar faces in there. It's,
yes. Yeah. And it made a fantastic double feature with Courageous, which we'll review next, and you'll understand a little bit later. It did miss a satisfying denouement at the end. It just sort of had an
fizzled
ending.
Out.
And it fizzled out.
It fizzled out, and not only that, there was a long scene of John Goodman talking to sort of explain what happened.
Yeah,
and from a narrative point of view, isn't very satisfying. But leading up to that point, it's pretty good.
Yes, and also to bring art to life, I have a little piece of extra news today.
Yes,
yes.
There were we watching Red State and thinking, Kevin Smith over the top, really, like that would ever happen,
and it did. Two members of a Christian paramilitary group called the Savior Unit were charged with kidnapping and burglary for allegedly conducting a home invasion while clad in ski masks, military garb, and bulletproof vests. Michael Sean Shafran, 32, and Cody Jacob Rogers, 18, were arrested after allegedly breaking into a home on Tuesday night in Mississippi. They were charged with three counts of kidnapping and burglary of an occupied house. Now, the interesting thing, according to the operations manual of the Savior Unit, the goal of this group is to promote Christ, obtain offenders who are dangerous to society, do community service work for churches and halfway houses, and do security for different functions. So if you're looking for some security guards.
Some security. And unstated, probably on page 2 of that would have been shoot them in the head. I'm sure that was next on their agenda.
Yes.
So Red State, turns out life is even stranger than fiction.
Yes.
My life is leading me down the road.
I've been doing about half of what I should have been doing as a dad.
You're being too hard on yourself.
Now I am revolution.
Yes,
you've been a good enough father.
I don't want to be a good enough father.
Can I sign this too?
trying to find my way. I don't feel like I started well. I want to finish well.
You gonna do this? Then do it right. Something like this needs ceremony.
I feel like a rich man.
As your father, I want the very best for you. I promise to take care of you.
We got a little bit ahead of ourselves there, and certainly Simon did. We forgot about the two words for Red State.
Yes, my two words for Red State are holy war.
Holy war. Mm, nice work. Nice work. Love your work. Mine are fire and brimstone. And we spent Sunday morning, Kaylee and I, perhaps we should have gone to church, and maybe that would explain why the theatre was basically empty, because all of the people who were in the market for Courageous were otherwise engaged. But
I don't think that was good for us, because we giggled a few times and we shouldn't have.
No, we didn't take it nearly as seriously as I think they were expecting us to, or the filmmakers were wanting us to. Normally when there's something very specialised, like a Bollywood movie or something like that, we have to sort of let them go, because we can't cover everything that goes on, you know. But when a film like Courageous gets a release in a big multiplex like that, and it certainly seems to be a trend, Kaylee and I thought that we owed it to the Cinematica listeners to go and check it out. There is, as Simon alluded to, there's big money in these faith-based pictures.
Well, it's big, but it's ticking along.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's and we were surprised that Sony, who are releasing it, they have a complete division, a studio, their own sort of sub-studio devoted to these films and to distributing them around the place. So, you know, it's interesting to go and check out exactly what these films are about and whether they're in fact any good. Courageous is about a group of cops in small town Georgia, and they're all three of them are Christians, one isn't. They're all sort of struggling one way or another with their families, with their positions in the community, and there's also a mate that sort of arrives on the scene, a Latino builder called, what was his name? I can't remember what his name is. No, anyway, who turns up, and they sort of adopt him into their group. There's a fair amount of Bible study goes on, and there are times in the film where you think if they took the God part out of this film, there would actually be a little nugget of drama in there, a little nugget of drama, a little nugget of some good performances, and a little nugget of a good message. You know, like there's been quite a few films that have come out in the last few years that have been made with Christian money or with Christian support that haven't hit you over the head with their Christian message. Soul Surfer was one example where it was based on a true story about the young girl who gets half eaten by a shark and sort of bounces back from that. Even films like Bridge to Terabithia are basically made with Christian money. And, there are good messages. And I don't have a problem with good, positive, uplifting messages, except when there's some really heavy-handed stuff going on in Courageous, isn't there, Kaylee?
But this is definitely a Christian film for a Christian audience. So out of the Cinematica context, it wouldn't be something that I would personally go to. I mean, I don't want to ostracize any of our Christian listeners who may enjoy the film, but it would be it's not a film for me, and it's and I knew that going in. But yeah, it was a bit heavy-handed, and there was this funny thing where there's this, you started out with this like this action, and then there's this big thing that happened in the middle, and then you're kind of wondering what's going to happen.
There's some major drama going on in the middle. I had a really big problem with the fact that it doesn't appear to have been set in anything approaching the real world, and yet it had the trappings of the real world. You know, it's like it was almost as if it was a Christian version of a really gritty cop drama with, you know, inspired by shows like The Wire or something, but they just didn't. There's no cursing, so there was a problem there. Everybody lives in these beautiful manicured houses with white picket fences. The only sort of shadow that is cast over their lives is
literally a shadow, because they're all African Americans.
Exactly. All of the criminals are black.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, oh, really? Is this actually how you see the world, or you perceive the world, or is this actually what's in front of you?
It's funny, because for a Christian film, I felt that it it didn't have a moral compass. There was overwhelming cultural stereotypes that I cannot get over.
Yeah, cultural and gender stereotypes.
And gender stereotypes that were...
massive gender problems, misogyny in there. But the core of it is something really important and something that films, mainstream films, simply don't do, which is the importance of being a father in the modern world and how and the difficulties that kids have growing up in fatherless one-parent homes. And, you know, there is a film there to be made that doesn't necessarily propose only one solution to that problem. And the only solution that these guys come up with is to stand up in front of their church and raise their hand and make a promise to be better dads. And, you know, I think that there in the real world, it's a little bit more complicated than that, isn't it? And so I could see that there was a nugget of something in there, and I just wish that it hadn't sort of been... yeah, surrounded by all of this other stuff that I couldn't really get behind, unfortunately. So, two words for courageous.
Fatherly advice.
Oh, yeah, like it. For me, unfortunately, conservative poppycock.
All they had was a tortilla.
That's right, yeah, so no real problems there. Anyway, that's the last of our reviews for today's show. Thank you very much to Kaylee and Simon for all of your hard work preparing for the show.
I prepared extra because I am the weather girl after all.
Oh, yes.
I looked up the long-range forecast for all everybody in New Zealand.
Are we all going to be going to the movies on Boxing Day? That's the big question.
Well, I don't know if they have long-range forecast that far in advance. I could just find this week. So week, coming up, there's going to be some rain across New Zealand. Drizzle, pours, rain patches, there's some weather warning. So get into your cinema and stay safe, people. Stay safe. I got a wicked sunburn last weekend. So I'm telling you.
You can't get sunburn in a picture theatre, can you?
You cannot.
Right. Next week on the show, we'll have our bumper Christmas special. The new Mission Impossible explodes onto our screens, and a film that I'm particularly looking forward to. I've come to quite like these, I have to say. The new Chipmunks film is coming out.
Is that Shipwrecked?
Chipwrecked, yeah.
I feel like I should go with you.
Yeah, come, because it's going to be a lot of fun. I must admit that I was fully expecting to hate the first one, and they've won me around.
I think this should be one of the ones where we tell people where we're going, and then we have a big Cinematica party.
A Cinematica get together, and hopefully, and bring your kids, everybody.
I heard my son listening to the Chipmunks, but it was. It was the Black Eyed Peas, you know, but it was the Chipmunks singing. I was like, this is just insane.
Oh,
you know,
that's good.
It was very funny.
And actually, that would be the best way to listen to the Black Eyed Peas. also, in next week's show, we're looking forward to all of the Boxing Day releases. It's probably the biggest movie day of the year. We're going to be talking about 10:10, Melancholia, The Muppets, and The Iron Lady on Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. That's Sunday the 18th. I think so. If you're listening and it's not, and Sunday the 18th is gone, sorry, you can't enter this competition. But we have two tickets to Wellington listeners for Cinematica to a radio preview of The Muppets at Reading Cinemas. So it's my double pass. So I'm gonna just say write in or tweet in with a reason why you should get it, and we will choose the best one, and you'll get to come and sit next to me.
And in honor of this, one of the great songs, because I saw it, I sneaked it, of the film, in honor of Brett McKenzie, also let us know, are you a Muppet or a man?
All right, yeah, good,
or a woman.
Good call. So we do have a double pass to the Muppets to give away, and also next week we'll be talking about the film that I keep calling the Thatcher film for some reason, because I can't.
Thatcher's Britain.
The Iron Lady. So we'll be doing all of that. And a heads up for you, we will be bringing you a podcast between Christmas and New Year, a special Best of 2011 edition. So start sending us your recommendations for best cinema experience of the year, and we'll share them with everyone. And if there's any leftover cake and crackers, there might even be some prizes for you. So, Kaylee, can you let people know how they could get in touch with us to tell us about their experiences this year?
Yes, well, of course, we are on Twitter. Our handle is at CinematicaCast. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast.
And if you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us feedback at the iTunes store, ratings, reviews, etc. They're all super useful. We love hearing from you, and we particularly love all those 5-star reviews. We're going to let you go with a little piece of music from the French band Air. And this is some music that they wrote for the Georges Méliès film A Voyage to the Moon. And this will be coming out. The music's going to be released in February, and the film A Voyage to the Moon plays a very crucial role in the new Martin Scorsese film Hugo, which we'll be talking about a little bit closer to the release time. It gets released on in mid-January, I think, here in New Zealand. A fantastic film in 3D. That's all for this episode of Cinematica.
See you all later. Have a great week.
Yes, and goodbye from me, Kayleigh Carruthers.
And goodbye from me, Dan Slevin. Thanks very much for listening.